Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of A Good Drop, where every other week or so, we drink a few things, tasting as good as the standards of the person that made them.
Yes, that's right. This week we are talking about home brew, the art of brewing at home.
I've done it a few times. You haven't done it yet?
I have not.
There's still time. I'm Stu.
I'm Michael.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Home brewskis. It's like the OG craft brewers.
Yeah, it's almost difficult in a historical sense to decide where home brewing actually begins, because the very beginning of brewing was at home.
Basically, it's how it all started. Someone was brewing stuff at home and then obviously thought that it is good enough to sell or barter with. Like, hey, try this. You will feel pretty happy after a few of these.
Yeah, and they said, well, my wife makes one of these too, but I'll compare yours to hers. And off they went, because back in the day, of course, the day being many, many thousands of years ago, everyone made it.
Men, women, children. And because it was oftentimes safer than drinking water, people drank beer or wine. Probably beer, though.
Yeah, a lot of very, very low alcohol content beer. Because any alcohol content at all made it safer to drink.
Yeah. I think I remember reading somewhere that historic beer was only around about 1.5 to 2%. So you could basically drink it all day and not get drunk, which made everyone happy. And then when people got better at brewing things and the ingredients and recipes got better quality to them, got a better quality to them, the ABV increased. And people actually did start getting drunk off them.
Yeah, and then, of course, it ceased being something that you could drink instead of water. I mean, you could still drink instead of water, but it wasn't a great idea. There was less water in it. There was more alcohol, which meant it had a far greater dehydrating property to it.
I think people were still happy to drink it like water, to be honest.
Oh, well, they wouldn't have realized that it dehydrated them at the time.
Yeah.
You know, talking medieval times here.
Yeah. That wasn't really a thing.
And now, of course, we are talking about beer and mead and anything else you can brew. Which is so very many things. They've been brewing for a long time. Distilling is newer.
Much, much newer. I think the earliest records of distilling are like the very earliest records are about 1100 AD. Or, sorry, 1100 CE. And yeah.
Whereas there's records going back to around 4000 BC.
Well, don't they have
in fact, more than 12,000 years, if you want to get into it. There's going back to 10,000 BC, speculating.
There's records of China brewing beer back in 6,000 BC. Like, they knew what was up. And, of course, everyone's been doing it throughout the ages and up until today, where it's, instead of it being a almost a necessity for clean drinking materials, it's now a hobby.
Yeah, it's someone who says, well, I like beer. I'd like to see what I can do to make a beer that's more suited to my distinct tastes.
Exactly. Or people that want to drink different things or try drinks that they found the recipe for made back in medieval times. For example, mead is quite a popular drink for homebrewers to make.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly requires a smaller amount of kit than a lot of other things you can brew.
Absolutely. If you want to go real simple, you can make mead with a bucket and a bucket, honey, water, and yeast. It'd be a bit rough, and you run the risk of it not turning out great, but you can still do it.
Yeah, which is certainly a lot less than if you're attempting to homebrew beer.
Mm. I suppose the nuts and bolts are still the same. You've got the fermenter, you've got the wort, the ingredients that you've mixed together, also called must. And you've got a way to seal it off from the outside world.
Yeah, now that is what's missing with the bucket, unless there's a lid for the bucket.
Hmm. Cling wrap? Balloon?
Yeah, and of course, I mean, generally, you want to be able to transfer in beer, ideally transfer from one thing to another thing at a certain point in the process.
Mm. Yeah, the longer you leave organic ingredients in your must it or wort, it the more flavors it imparts, and after a certain point, the things are going to start rotting.
Yeah, and then you've got to get it out because you don't want to impart flavors of rotting.
No, that's not a good flavor for beer or anything really.
Yeah, no, you couldn't even push that as a special brew. Limited time, special brew. Just for Halloween.
Rotting flesh.
Rotting IPA.
Someone's probably done that, but it's actually tasted good.
Somehow, yeah. They'd have found a way.
Beer, it finds a way. Yeah, as I'm sure we've mentioned before, I occasionally homebrew mead because I'm a fan of fantasy and sci-fi, and mead is one of those drinks that pops up from time to time. You look at Skyrim, for example, there's a bunch of different meaderies that apparently turns out there is a recipe book you can get for Skyrim food and drink.
Interesting. Not surprising, but
yeah,
interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah. I would actually love to get my hands on it because I kind of like the idea of making a hunting brew mead or blackbriar mead, or the one with juniper berries in it.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, anything with juniper berries, you know it's going to have an interesting flavor.
Hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't mind just giving that a whirl, just for the hilarity of it, because I'm friends with a bunch of nerds. I'm a nerd. Like, everyone will get a kick out of it if I put down on the table a bottle of hunting brew mead.
Yes, just for shits and giggles.
Hmm. And, you know, I've got the skills and knowledge to do it.
So why not?
Exactly. But we're not just talking about mead, because we do have a homebrew mead episode way back when, but we figured it was time to do a proper revisit on the old homebrew thing itself.
Yes, because as we mentioned in our beer episode way back in episode one, beer came about purely by accident, allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, can they really prove it?
Well, exactly right. Because there's, you know, there's the stories about the accident of how it happened with grain ending up with a number of other things just inadvertently in it along with some water because of rain and open containers and such. And beer happened.
Mm.
And people began making it and they made it at home. Everybody made it at home.
Yeah.
It wasn't legal to sell it for a very long time.
Well, it wasn't illegal to sell it either. Like, people just did it because it was the thing to do.
Yeah, everybody made it at home because it was what you did. And there was huge amounts of variety in different locations in what ended up going into your beers. Different grains, just like today, a variety of different grains were used.
Yep.
Like Africans largely used maize, millet, and cassava. North America used persimmon. And, of course, in Mexico, they used agave. South America used corn, and they used sweet potatoes in Brazil. Japan, you know, started brewing with rice and eventually made sake.
Yeah. Went from a rice beer to a rice wine.
Yeah.
And now they got rice spirits.
Yeah, exactly. And in China, they used wheat. Other Asian cultures used sorghum. The Russians used rye. And Egyptians used barley and are believed to have actually cultivated it strictly for brewing.
Hmm.
Because they didn't actually think it made decent bread.
There you go. I can't say I've actually had barley bread before, but you never know.
Yeah. Well, and apparently a text from 1600 BC in Egypt contains 100 medical prescriptions calling for beer.
Starting with the prescriptive alcohol way back then.
Yeah, and so naturally, if you're making it yourself, well, no need to go to the apothecary for your medicines. You've got your beer at home.
That's hilarious. And, well, like tinctures and elixirs, they were the original distillations for alcoholic stuff. And that was all done by the apothecaries, the potion masters, if you will. But these are all still small, I guess, small batch.
Yeah, well, they certainly, apart from that supposedly Egypt actually had people who brewed beer specifically for the pharaoh.
I'm not surprised.
It would have all been home stuff. But naturally, if you're as important as the pharaoh, you're not brewing your own beer. I would assume that the royals in the UK didn't brew theirs either.
No.
Someone else would have brewed it for them.
Yeah, just like they had probably had a bunch of chefs cooking the food for them. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, exactly right. Yeah. If you've got the dosh.
If I was that important.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a lie. If I was that important, I'd probably still cook my own food. Because I like to cook my own food.
Yes. Yeah, so what we're talking about Egyptians and beer, though, apparently beer actually had a lot of importance in Egyptian culture, which I guess would make it really important for people to brew it themselves. Because if a guy offered a woman a sip of his beer that he had brewed and she accepted it, they were betrothed.
Whoa. That's pretty hardcore. It's just people getting accidentally married left, right, and center.
Well, if you're drinking another guy's beer, then... Yeah, apparently that was a big thing. And I got to figure that, you know, if a guy offered beer to a chariot rider's woman, that might not have gone so well.
No.
But you never know what's going to happen in a situation like that.
No.
What if they're already in a couple? What happens then? Well, she'd say no, I assume. She would just decline the beer.
Yeah.
We just know that homebrew played, well, beer, and thus homebrew, because people were brewing it at home, played a very significant part in Egyptian culture a long-ass time ago.
And I guess it was worth explaining all that because it is the origin of homebrew. Like, just because commercial breweries and vineyards started up, it did not mean that people stopped brewing it at home. It just meant that less people did it.
Yeah, exactly. And for something to become commercially viable, people have to want the thing. And that generally begins with it having some level of importance. At least it did thousands of years ago when there was no such thing as advertising.
That's true. I guess on the other side of the coin, people wanting the thing but being too lazy to make it themselves.
Yeah, and that's,
or being unable to make it themselves.
And that would be where you go to either, you know, your next door neighbor who makes too much, or maybe go down to the local monastery where they make some fine beers.
Still do.
Still do. Always have. Always will.
Mm.
Because monasteries have always been a bit of both. They've been making it for themselves, and, well, they weren't always making it to sell. That came through later when it was passed that they should make money to support themselves, and why not do that with the beer they're making anyway?
Mm. It's a way to be self-sufficient.
Yes.
And at some point, donations don't cut the mustard.
Yeah, exactly. And that in and of itself is a facet of homebrew, because they were homebrewing.
Mm.
The monks were homebrewing.
Yeah.
And then they pushed it that little bit further and turned it into craft brewing.
And people liked the idea, so they started doing it themselves. And in the late 70s, when it finally became legal to do it in the US, the OG craft brewers started doing their thing.
Yeah, exactly. And for those of you playing along in the United States, that was October 14th in 1978, thanks to President Jimmy Carter. The law became effective in 1979.
Hmm. And it was not long after that that the earliest craft brewing houses popped up.
Yeah, though, I mean, home brewing actually initially began during Prohibition, of course, in the US, when it was completely illegal, but you got to drink something.
Yeah, people... Yeah, Prohibition did not work that well. It just made a lot of criminals a lot of money.
Yeah, Prohibition did not work at all. It led to some really creative car modifications, is what Prohibition did.
No, they were stock cars. They looked identical to a regular car.
Yes, there was nothing different about them at all.
No.
Certainly nowhere to hide beer.
No. Or any kind of booze at all. Especially not gin.
Oh no, nobody was making gin during the 1920s.
No. Yes, the origins of NASCAR, the stock cars, the gin runners, they were all done off the books. That was all done off the books. And it sort of still is. But now, I suppose the government wants their cut, and if they catch you selling alcohol, they kind of don't care that you are. They just want their cut.
Yeah, they want to be able to tax you for it.
Yeah. But that being said, the law varies from country to country. Some countries are very much pro homebrew. Some countries are very much not. I know in Australia, it's illegal to distill your own spirits, I believe. Is that right? You're certainly not allowed to sell it.
Mm.
You're allowed to brew your own beer. Basically, you're allowed to make your own stuff here as long as you don't sell it. As soon as you start selling it, then it becomes an issue and you need a license for it. And I believe that's very similar in the US.
Yes. Yeah, so, yeah, apparently you need an excise manufacturer license to distill spirits in Australia.
Mm. For commercial purposes or just full stop?
Either or. Yeah, personal use or sale. No distillation, period. So that's, I guess, a lot like what happens in the US with people who distill moonshine. It's just blanket illegal without the appropriate licensing.
Mm. People still do it.
Oh, of course they do.
Yeah.
And you can buy legitimate moonshine in the US.
So first question, why? Why on earth would you ever want to buy that stuff? It sounds absolutely dreadful. Second, why?
Yeah, so if you're one of our listeners from the US and you like moonshine, do please tell us why you like it and about the varieties of moonshine. We'd be interested to hear.
Well, it's people are buying it, so it's got to be something.
Well, exactly right. There's got to be something to it, and we can't get it here.
No. I mean, you can make your own if you have that applicable license.
Yes, or you can make your own the traditional way if you don't have that applicable license. But you can't guarantee it will turn out the same way as traditional moonshine made from somewhere in the US.
Hmm. Who knows? And I guess that brings us up to today, where homebrewing is fairly easily accessible. You can go down to your local homebrew shop, pick up everything you need from the container that you ferment your initial initial wort in or must, to bottles and bottle caps to bottle it and distribute it to your friends, or to store it in your garage for years, and then you finally forget, and when you pass away in a few decades, your children will open them up and go, "Wow, I didn't know Dad did this."
Yeah, exactly right. And of course, if you're in Australia, you're allowed to make 22 litres of beer per week.
Holy shit, that's a lot of beer.
Which is, yeah, still quite a bit.
22 litres of beer. Wow. Yes, that's at least two cases of beer.
Yeah, we've got Gough Whitlam. Yeah, we've got Gough Whitlam to thank for that.
He must have liked to homebrew.
Yeah, I would assume so. Which is great.
Because,
You know, you always worry that, yes, you can buy these things and you can produce up to the cap, but what is the cap?
Yeah.
Well, quite high, apparently.
That's very high.
Yeah.
I mean, 22 litres, when you obviously can't drink it yourself. You cannot drink 22 litres of beer in a week. That's one hell of a bender.
Oh, yeah. But you'd be doing that and having it with friends, for sure. And that's a big part of homebrew. Because like I said at the start of the episode, I haven't brewed, but I have consumed a lot of homebrew. It's a thing, you make it and you share it with your friends.
Yeah. Well, that's how I understand it as well.
Yeah, I mean, in the same way as craft brewers want to make something special and unique that is distinctly them and then share it with people, and home brewers often want to do the same, make something unique and different and share it with people.
Yeah, because I suppose half the point of making it is to share it. Share something exciting, share a nice recipe, or discover good recipes. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly right.
I know that's one of the reasons why I make mead. Not just because I like it, but because I want to make something good to share with friends.
And it's always satisfying when you do share something good with friends and you see your friends enjoying that thing.
Yeah, it's like baking very good cookies, I guess.
Yes.
Baking a really good batch of cookies.
Really good alcoholic cookies.
I wonder if you can do that. I do remember seeing a stall at one of the local food street markets that was selling cupcakes with little tiny eyedroppers full of alcohol in them.
Huh.
Like, kind of like a sauce, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I know you can do it with cake.
Christmas cake.
Oh, well, Christmas cake, some sponge cakes. There was someone who I used to work with who brought in a cake for some sort of event, I don't remember what, and she had been feeding the cake, and you know how you feed a cake, and she had fed it something like 3 bottles of sherry.
Holy moly.
So when you cut into the thing, liquid came out of it. It was not like eating a cake, it was like drinking a cake.
That's quite impressive.
Yeah, I was amazed that she managed to get it to stay in there, but as soon as any modicum of pressure was applied to this cake,
it just oozed.
Yep.
That sounds delicious.
It was pretty good, yeah. Yes, let's talk about the process. It's very similar to the traditional brewing methods that we've talked about previously.
Mm. Well, there's no difference, really. You're just doing it on a totally different scale.
A significantly smaller scale, and probably with, dare I say it, inferior tools.
Usually.
Compared to what the pros would be using.
Yeah, well, not everyone can afford a several hundred litre steel tank.
Well, exactly. And who has space at home for a several hundred litre steel tank?
Well, I certainly don't.
Especially when you can only brew 22 litres a week.
Hmm. I wonder if they average that out over the year. So if you did one big batch per year.
So you're saying if you had the 2200 litre steel tank and you only used it once per year.
2200 litre.
That's still too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you're buying tanks that size, you may as well buy the commercial license too.
Well, yes. If you've got that kind of money.
Yeah. So you can start with a kit. You can start with a recipe you find on the internet. You can just wing it, like I've done a couple of times. I do not recommend. You can go just run down to your local homebrew shop and pepper them with questions. And they'll say, just take this and get out of my shop.
Yes, they will be very happy to tell you to buy something and leave. No, they'll probably actually answer your questions.
Yeah, because the kind of people that work at those shops are, they kind of love what they do, in my experience anyway.
Yeah, like craft brewers.
Yeah.
Like if you're getting into homebrewing and you go into a craft brewery and start talking about homebrew, someone else will pipe into the conversation and give you advice.
Mm. And there's forums all over the internet where you can have your questions answered. Like, there's so many resources out there to help you in your journey.
Yes. Yes, there are.
Yeah. So, let's say you start with a kit. You could probably start with a 5 litre or one or two gallon bottle or bucket. Some people start with 10-gallon buckets. You throw your ingredients in, and obviously I'm simplifying it. You will definitely have to read the instructions on or the method on your recipe, because that's going to change from batch to batch.
Oh, of course. And naturally with homebrew, same as with any brew, if you're making beer, you want to be cautious of what kind of yeast you're using.
Well, that's with everything, because it, in fact, imparts quite a significant difference in flavor.
Well, and to be certain, to avoid wild yeast, because you can't get rid of it once it's there.
It's very, very hard.
Yes.
Much easier on a smaller scale, but certainly challenging on a big scale. Because, like, in a small scale, you can just douse the whole thing in sanitizer and you're pretty good.
Yes, I suppose if you've got a small enough vessel, yes.
But again, much harder to do with your 2200 litre steel tank.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
And I suppose the biggest thing you need to do with homebrewing is be patient. I've forgotten to do that a few times, but you just got to do it. The process can take anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months for fermenting it, and then if you're aging it, then it takes even longer, anywhere from another 2 to 3 months to a few years.
Yeah, depending upon what it is that you're brewing, and of course anything, even if you're doing something where you're getting a base spirit and then turning that into something else, that also takes time. So remember to be patient, and if you want something for a specific event, plan ahead.
Plan way ahead. Plan longer ahead than you think you'll need. Because yeah. It wouldn't hurt to add an extra couple of weeks.
Yeah, because the last thing you want to do is bring out something that's not ready yet.
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, though, it's pretty easy to do. As long as you basically stick to the recipes or find forums where you can ask your questions, it's easy and fun, even if it is a bit messy. Kind of like baking. Once you know the gist of it, it's not too bad.
Yes. So if you've been thinking about homebrew, remember, it is a millennia-old tradition, and you can join it.
Yeah. I haven't got anything else.
No, that's it from me as well.
So, if you liked what you heard, everyone, be sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. We are A Good Drop All About Alcohol on your favorite podcast app, including Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, and many more.
You can also find us on the social media platforms, Facebook and Instagram, as A Good Drop Podcast. Mm.
If you want to check out our giant library of previous episodes, jump on our website, agooddrop.com.au, or if you've got any questions, comments, feedback, if you have a favorite homebrew recipe you'd like us to know about, send us an email to agooddrop@gmail.com.
Be sure to tune in next time when we do another blind taste tester.
I say this every time, but it's been a while.
It has, and this time we'll be blind taste testing port or tawny, which is of course a port style fortified wine that is not made in Portugal.
No, I believe, but we're still going to count it under the same umbrella, just in this particular case, because yes. Australia makes its own version. Obviously, you get it in Portugal, and it's all pretty damn nice anyway.
Yes, and all tastes very similar. It's all in the same style.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Indeed. So until then, cheers.
Cheers.